I'm Brenda Dennehy.
I'm Julie Haynes.
And this is Left on Red.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to Left on Red, the podcast where no topic is off limits and we get through a healthy dose of girl talk. It's like a virtual coffee date with your besties.
Spot on, Jewel. Each week we'll dive deep into a juicy topic that's bound to start discussions and fill up our DMs.
And we've got your back when it comes to recommendations. It could be makeup, movies, fashion or food. We'll fill you in what we've loved and maybe didn't love this week.
Before we wrap things up, we leave you with a motivational quote to carry with you into the week ahead. It might be nonsense, but we will try. Because let's face it, we all need a little extra boost sometimes.
Ready to go?
Let's crack on.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to part two of Brenda's story. She told her first half on Monday, and now she's back and she wants to tell her the end of her story. So off you go.
Yeah, I said, God, there's so much to it. So I think we ended the last podcast on me losing my job in Red FM, which, oh my, it's just around 5 years now. So it's I can still visualize the room, I can still remember their faces and that undeniable. But I remember driving home from work that day. Again, like, I couldn't tell my mother anything now about this or anything in the family because I was so undenied. Like, I was so undeniable about it. And I remember parking up at home. I was living in an apartment complex in Ballincollig. And I remember, obviously, I had a stash of tablets in the car. And I remember taking them. And remember, I don't know how many I took. I took enough. And I remember saying to myself, I'm going to take so many of these. I don't want to wake up. This is weird now listening to, because it's not that I wanted to take my own life, but I didn't want to wake up. And it's hard to understand what exactly does that mean. I spoke to someone who's in the rooms, as they say, who's also an addiction. He was like, I totally get what you mean. I did not want to wake up because the shame of telling my family, the shame of everyone finding out, because obviously, you know, I probably had this idea of who I was. And I'm not that fucking important, do you know? So I actually just went away and took so many tablets, and I think, I don't know how many hours I slept for it, but when I woke up, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, as in, why? You know what I mean? I was like, God, did I woke up? So the shame with it. I actually didn't tell my mother for a couple of days because the shame, my mother actually found out from someone on Red FM. And can you imagine that then as well? Like, you're like, I didn't have the decency to tell, but I couldn't. The shame's too much, Jewel. I couldn't tell anyone. I couldn't. I'd let them down again. Do you know? Like, 9 years later, back again. Like, I let them all down again. But they didn't come out to me. They just felt sorry for me. Like, they were just devastated for me. But this time, I think the losing the job, again, my second rock bottom. And I call myself a repeat offender. And, like, I can say that because I'm tired and about me. When I have to, I feel my success and my recovery will always be making jokes about it myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, remember I rang my mother there on the way up last night and I was like, oh yeah, I have a few drinks on the way home on the plane. And she laughed. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I have to do that. But this time I knew I was absolutely fucked again. And I got onto someone in Convera, which is the different treatment centres by Sister Concilio, who said to them, who is a walking saint. That woman is amazing. And he, I said, look, I'm absolutely messed up again. And he couldn't believe it. He was like, what? I had no idea. And I said, yeah, I kept it a secret. And after losing my job, I've really, really messed up now. I've really messed up. So within days of that, I got into treatment centre. Same kind of people that convert in Galway. And again, my mother dropped me up as you read out the status in the first episode. And I never forget her driving me up. I remember driving in the driveway, big long driveway, cool iron up in Galway. And again, Joe Duffy's Live Line coming on. And I remember screaming and shouting in the car, like, basically, I wish it was something else. I wish there was something else wrong with me. Because, like, I have this addiction that I have to carry for the rest of my life, which at times, you know, at times you're kind of like, oh, look, okay, if I had some kind of an illness, whatever. But, like, I have to monitor this every single day. And, you know, it's kind of, sometimes you're kind of like, you know, yeah, this is a desperate card to be dealt. And it is, because we're never fully recovered. We're in recovery. I'll never be cured, ever, ever be cured. And when you think about that, that's why they say just for a day. And sometimes at the start getting sober, you're thinking just for the minute, just for an hour, just for a day. A day seems an eternity sometimes when you're getting sober. And I often know as well, if someone in an AA room, if it was their first day in an AA room, I'm kind of like, you're the most important room in the person tonight, not the person who's 6 years sober. It's you for coming in here tonight. But I remember just like, oh, so an absolute disgrace or an absolute failure. I can't tell you how much I hated myself. It was, I was actually scared how much I hated myself more. I can't. It was actually a dangerous place where I went to in my head. But obviously went into Galway and the same setup. It was all women. There was men there actually as well, but it was women and men. Same setup, women in one side of the house, men in the other side of the house. Mass every day. I'd done it all. And actually, mass was the highlight of the day because you got to see the men.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to socialise. I mean, I loved it, of course. The codependent, looking at all the men going, he's like me now. He's like me. He's, I wonder what he's on. Do you know what I mean? Is he like, is he on the Xanax like me and all this? Do you know what I mean? And then, you know what I mean? Because you're just trying to, it's just, you know, it's all this kind of, this addict head, but you're like, I'm with my people again. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what have you messed up on? Like, so maybe I'm after losing my kids. I'm going to court. I'm up for drink driving. I'm just out of prison and all this kind of thing. And the common denominator is you're, and we're all addicts. You know what I mean? We're all have this addiction that we have to deal with. But when I went in there, Jesus Christ, the hatred I'm talking about. I never forget my mother ringing me the first week. And I, do you know when you start crying so much? That like, it's, you know, when a child cries, they can't stop. It's uncontrollable. I never forget being on the payphone, Turk's payphone, 15-minute phone call a week. And I could nearly feel her heart breaking for me. The hatred I had for myself. Like, I just hated myself. I can't even tell you how bad it was. I just absolutely hated myself. Everything I'd done, I couldn't believe I was like there again. You know what I mean? I'd started my shit out 9 years ago and then I was there again, just messing it up. No, I just felt pity for all my family again. I was like, what a mess. What an absolute mess. And this time it's the tablets and I was like, sort yourself out. But I never forget my mother saying to me, you have to forgive yourself, Brenda. You have to. And I just couldn't. She said, you have to forgive yourself to move on. And I never forget. She said, I just tried to work on it. And like, I swear to God, you see me laughing all the time. Now, when I was in there, like, kind of just trying getting over the DTs coming off the tablets. I swear to God, I never forget writing down, will I ever laugh again? I was that depressed. Will I ever laugh again? Coming off the tablets, I cannot tell you. It's 8 weeks of actual hell. I actually think I went to hell. I honest to God can tell you, inside in that room, coming off them. And you see, of course, when you go in, they're asking you, how much were you taking? And my mother was with me. I couldn't exactly tell her the truth. So obviously they determine what you should be detoxing to help you come off it. Yeah. And sure, I didn't want to like upset her even more. I should have just been honest. I wasn't on anything. Could have gotten a seizure. You know what I mean? Very likely to get a seizure. When I actually told people after, they were like, what the fuck are you thinking? Because I couldn't upset her even more. Like, she was a broken woman. So then they actually whisked me off to some doctor and I finally got something to help me, you know what I mean? But I still wasn't sleeping or anything.
Was and it a completely different come down to just alcohol?
Drink, no problem. Give me a week on the Olibrium, no problem. This, I'm not joking, you know, I had shakes for 8 weeks going nonsense. I couldn't even cut my food. The come down was so bad. We ran the house. You run the house in there. Like, there's the guys do the farm. They do it like they grow all their veg up there. That's how you pay 150 euros a week and then the state and they make the money. And, you know, because some treatment places are like 8 or 10 grand. Yeah. I wasn't paying that. No one can afford that. But other people, you pay a certain amount, the state pays the rest, and then you run the house. So that's where they save money. And we're coming off the tablets. Hell on earth. I actually, when I was going through it, I actually didn't think I'd make it at times. I was like, will I be alive in the morning? And what's going to happen to me in the morning? Going for a shower, drama. If I thought I had to wash my hair, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do? Because my hands were shaking so much. You could only write letters because obviously there was no phones, no nothing. So I remember writing to my mother and like, oh my God, even writing in my diary and everything. That was my own personal thing to see my progress. That was when I was writing, will I laugh again? Today I did not laugh again. I don't think I'll ever laugh again. I don't ever think I'll be happy again. But then over the weeks, I get things, you know, that was like, oh my God, I'm not shaking today. And I'll never forget one of the nights I fully slept. It was like people were jumping for joy for me that Brenda actually, because every morning people, did you sleep? I was like, no. And they were like, Jesus Christ, this one's going to go mental. Yeah. She hasn't slept in 8 weeks. But I surely got better and better. And then like I got responsibility in the house because obviously they could say, look, this one, you know, she wants to change her life around. Because you can see who's in there for the right reasons and the wrong reasons. And obviously I was there for the right reasons again. But my God, did I absolutely hate myself. I can't even tell you. But I remember, and I said it in my post, I remember writing a letter to my mother again, and I remember that's what I said, isn't it? I wrote my mother a letter, and I remember where I was in the room, and I remember writing down, I promise you I'll make the mother of all comebacks, and I never forget the day I did it. I remember what the room was like, and I remember posting it to her, and that day forward I was like, I'm going to do everything that like the 23 or 22 year old Brenda that go to college wanted to do. And then I got out in June 2019. I had no job. And obviously the whole shame of losing the job. Sure, I thought everyone in Cork was talking about me. And I'll never forget, my mother had written to me actually. And she said, look, there was a bit of gossip going around that Brenda didn't. He ended up in rehab. And of course, the shame and that then. Oh my God, because it wouldn't be secret. And then I'll never forget, there was a woman up there. And remember, I knew her from the rehab 9 years ago. And I remember telling her, oh my God, I'm so mortified. People know about me again. This, who am I? And she goes, Brenda, the cats and the dogs in the street know about you. She goes, get over it, big deal. Yeah. And she said, one day you'll tell your story and we'll help people. And here we are. And I was like, no way, I couldn't do that. And she actually messaged me on earlier. And then got out, and then I had no job. And then I was like, sure, can't go anywhere near media because the embarrassment and all that in me, you know. And I was like, look, I'll go back and I'll start doing PR or something like that, or something that'll suit me like that. And sure, I thought everyone now in Cork was talking about me in the shame. And I remember putting up my first Facebook post that I was just up doing something. Sure, people didn't know. People had an idea maybe where I went. We didn't really know each other at the time. And it wasn't really a thing. Some people might have known, but then other people didn't know what happened to me. And not that I was ashamed, but I was like, it's just not going to tell anyone. So then in fairness, Neil's wife, Paula, she'd given me shifts in the Sunday Mirror newspaper. And I was never a writer, but look, I was like, look, this is way back into the media world. I'll throw my hand at it. And not for long, I actually was getting front pages in the Sunday Mirror. And then she kindly enough gave me shifts in the RSVP magazine. Again, not a writer, but look, I said, it's a way back in, you know. Never in my wildest dreams, I was out in June. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think, I remember being over in Laughterlandy over in Abu Dhabi, and I remember getting a text from Neil Prendeville, and I was like, God, what's this now? Because I'd actually ended up meeting all the lads from Red FM, and you know, I wanted to go for lunch with them, and I explained, and I was like, I'm so sorry for what happened, and I'm up here from 96FM and everything, going like, this is what happened, and because they all had my back at the time, yeah. Even though I felt like I was an embarrassment to them, but they all really cared. And I never forget it. It was like, can you call me, please? I want to ask you something. And I was like, what? I don't know. He's probably looking for a number now for someone. Mm. He's probably looking for a number for someone. And then I rang him, and I was in Abu Dhabi, and I was like, oh yeah, is everything all right? Because I was getting good stories and he wanted the guests. And he was like, no, I just want to ring you and say, listen, I want you to have your job back in Red FM. Now this is like 5 months after getting out of rehab. And I was kind of like, what? He's like, yeah, I want you to have your job back. Have a think about it. Let me know when you come home. Sure, I couldn't believe it. And then I remember telling my sister and mother, and they were like, oh my God, oh my God. So never forget, I was on air that holiday, and I was like, oh my God, if this is what recovery is, if this is, no, I was much happier myself and everything. So I never forget, I came back. Then a couple of weeks later, I went over to his house in December, and I remember sitting in the room, and we were chatting about everything that had happened, and he was so, so good to me. And then he was like, yeah, we'll give you your job back. And, you know, there'd be no stress, da, 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 da. And I was like, no problem. Yeah. So I went back in. I was 9 months gone, and I was walking back the door. I was gone since March 2019. And I walked in back the door in January 2020. And it was like, I was like, this is a comeback now that I'm talking about. This is, I couldn't believe that actually happened. And I was working back with Emer, and we're having a ball. And then the pandemic hit. Just before the pandemic, actually, as well. I actually quit the cigarettes, and then I was gone off everything. I had the cigarettes gone, I had the Xanax gone, I had the drink gone, everything gone. But then the pandemic hit, and obviously the world was falling apart then. Mm. And I remember when I was going back, they were like, there'll be no stress and no drama. There'll be no other thing. Stress and drama. Sure, we were stressed out of our heads at work. Emer was pregnant, so she actually had to work from home. Mm. So it was me and Mark Willington inside in the office with Neil. And like, there was hardly no one at work. And I swear, I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm going to be fucked again. I'm not going to be able for this stress in the back of my head. But then I was kind of like, no, you'll be able for it. This will be the making of you. So all throughout, put my head down, worked away. And do you know what? It was probably the best bits of radio we ever produced. When I look back, you know what I mean? I'm like, it was an awful time we all went through, wasn't it?
Yeah, but we all tuned into Neil Prendeville, to be fair, the whole, like, this I certainly it. Did every single morning.
Do you know? Like, yeah. And we made sure, and I think radio, that time, especially live radio, mm. like, that was people saving grace.
Yeah, it was. It was company as well.
It was company. Yeah. It was. And it's such like great support with Emer and a great team. And Neil was very good and everything. And then I think after that, then things, the world came around again. And I, do you know what my thing was? I used to have a very bittersweet relationship with the London thing. And I suppose this will explain why I'm so obsessed with London. And I get upset over it because like when I was 22, 23, I wanted to go to London. And like I wanted to be over there working for Mail and Liner, like TV and all this kind of stuff. And when I got out of college, like I was fucked in the drink. So I always look at this in and it was so hard to even admit it always. Like my addiction stole my dreams and like that. I used to be always very bitter about it because I used to see people in London then that I knew and I was like they're living my dream and it used to kill me and I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to be envious of people. I wanted to be happy for people. But I used to be like, she's living my dream and it always ate me up so much. I was like, that was meant to be me, but sure, I'm the alcoholic, it's not me. And it always killed me so much. And early, I always loved London. Whenever I used to go to London, I wanted to live there and I just had this certain, I was drawn to it. I don't know what it was. And then I suppose, I never forget it. Like, do you know what I mean? These like epiphanies and everything. I never forget. I was like, you're going to laugh now what I'm going to say next. I was training for my first marathon, the 2021. And I was like, I was living in a house in Ballincollig. And I never forget. I was up running in the morning and it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, which is nothing new. And I swear to God, when I used to be training for the London Marathon, the first one, I used to pretend in Ballincollig, coming into my estate, it was Buckingham Palace because that was the finish line. Yeah. So you know me and they're all manifesting. And I swear to God, it was like, I don't know what happened to me. I was like, oh my God, I have to move to London. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to work on ITV and I'm going to get my dream job and I'm going to end this back. I'm getting what my addiction stole. I'm getting it back. And that's going to be my comeback. And I swear to God, I was like a woman possessed. I remember going into work telling Mark Willington because he's English. And I was like, well, do you think they'll like me in London? Do you think they'll get me? And he was like, what's after having this one? It was just out of the blue. And he was like, yeah, they'll totally get you. And I remember I used to ring my mother and I ring my mother every day and I used to ring her every day after the show at 12 o'clock and went to the bathroom and goes, girl, yeah, come here. So I'm going to move home, right? And I'm going to save like a couple of grand and I'm going to go to London and I'm going to be there like next January or February, right? And like, are you all right? And then she said, oh yeah, no problem. Yeah, no problem, whatever you need, we'll help you. And I was like, so I'm going to move home in June. Is that all right? And yeah, she's like, oh yeah, no problem. I'm going to bring home Winston and we'll look after the dog. And yeah, whatever you do want to Brenda, we'll help you. Right, so I remember 2 months, moved out of the house I was in Ballincollig, shift all the stuff back to Ballydesmond, manifesting on overdrive. I'm going to end up working in ITV. I'm going to get that goal. And I'm going to get what it stole off me years ago. So I was always hoping I'd see people in London. And I always want to be happy for people, but I wasn't. And that's because I wasn't happy in myself with the London thing. It used to kill me. So I was working away and I was driving up and down from Ballydesmond every day. And I didn't mind it because I knew the long, people think I was mad, but I was like, I knew I was going to go to London. And I knew I was going back from what was taken from me years ago. And then no one in TV knew me over there really, because like, who knows Red FM over in London? Yeah. They don't, do you know what I mean? But I never forget, it was like October, it was after doing the marathon and I was in Albufeira with my friend Deirdre and I went absolutely wild. I think everyone thought I was pissed on that, the Continente.
Yeah.
People
thought
I was absolutely, but that was just high on life.
Yeah.
And I never forget, I emailed, no one from TV was, actually my now boss, I used to be emailing at the time and he was like, sorry, Brenda, there's no jobs, whatever. And I used to keep, every time he'd email, he was so nice. And I used to be like, no, I was actually mailing him 6 years ago, begging him for a job. And now I'm looking over across the room at him. But I remember no one was taking notice of me. And I said, you know what? I'm going to email the Mail online because I read the showbiz. And look, if I have to go in with the writing, I have the experience in RSVP, the Mirror, that I wouldn't have had if the whole addiction thing and losing my job didn't happen. And I emailed her name, Rebecca Davison. She was the showbiz editor in the Mail online at the time. And I put the title Eager Beaver in, like how much I loved the Mail online and all this, and she loved it. And I never forget, she was like, oh, do you want to do a phone call next week and we'll see how we get on. And then she was like, she gave me an article, she said, I'll give you a picture of Kelly Brook, can you write a couple of lines on this? And I sent it back to her and she was like, oh, I really like that. And she seemed to like me.
Yeah.
And then I got a week's training online at home in October. I took the week off to work with the Mail online. So I didn't want to do the writing, but I was like, look, this could be your end for London. Yeah. This could be the breakthrough. So what I did then was I was doing freelance shifts with them. I go into Red FM 7 to 2 and then I did freelance shifts with Mail Online 2 to 11. So I was going, working from 7 to 11 and then getting up for the gym in the mornings, because again, we'll talk about the gym and my kind of help for my anxiety. I needed the gym because that's just my, that the gym just helps my head so much. So I was doing that for a couple of months, and then come Christmas, like I was actually nearly like, people are like, you're going to have a breakdown. But I was like, I know it's coming. I know it's coming. So then in January 2022, no, then December, they offered, the Mail Online offered me a contract for a year to move to London, and they were like giving me security and everything, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is the breakthrough I need. This is the breakthrough I need. So I remember I did another, I went back to Red FM, told them the news that I was going to move to London, and sure, they were delighted for me, but I was like, this is it now. This is it. So I went, I moved in March 2022, which is my anniversary now, will have gone that I'm there 2 years. So I went over, and that Rebecca, like every time I meet her, we're great friends, but every time I meet her, I tell her how grateful I am. And she for a while she was like, just why you keep saying thanks to me? But I actually opened up to her in December and I was like, you don't understand what you did for me. Like, you made my dream come true after it was stolen years ago. Do you know, which is, she doesn't understand. She'll never get it. She'll, even if she listens, she'll never get it. But like, she was the one who gave me the breakthrough for everything else to happen. So then after that, I was trying to get into TV and all that kind of stuff. And my goal was never to kind of do the writing stuff too long, you know what I mean? Yeah. But my goal was always to get into breakfast television. So then I got into Sky News, BBC News, and I swear to God, I kept going. It was like the hardest one to get, and I kept at it and kept at it. And then one day I ended up emailing one of the producers, and I swear to God, the day I walked in there, I was the happiest woman ever. It was like,
and that's why I love
London so much. Like, every time I go on about it, and for ages I've wanted to be able to tell people why I love London so much, is because this dream was stolen for me years ago, and now I have it back. And do you know what I mean? It's never, my big thing as well, it's never too late. Like, I'm 38 now, I know we get a laugh out of it, 39 next month, but for me it's never too late. And as well, the thing with me, do you know, when I talk about how much I absolutely hated myself the second time round, that detest I had for myself when I was in Killarney and Galway after coming off the Xanax, the hatred I had for myself, that's why now, you know, sometimes I go on and say I'm my own best friend. Yeah. Like, I've gone from hating myself, I mean insulting myself, like I just thought I was the worst person in the world, and then like to know I'm the happiest person sitting on my own. I love being on my own. I love people, but I love being on my own. I love, like, I just say to myself, I'm my own best friend, to be able to walk around London all on my own in like the biggest city in the world, but just being so, so happy and content. That means so much. And then I suppose with the exercise, I suppose I, at the moment, I don't presently do AA, and look, AA is brilliant. It's very beneficial for people and all that, has helped many. I did it loads at the start. There's nothing wrong with it or anything like that. I suppose for me, my AA is meditation every morning. I'm up every morning, my eyes could be hanging out my head at 2:30. I'll be meditating, I'll be writing my gratitude list. And then my exercise. What exercise? I had no idea about exercise. Do you know when you relate exercise to losing weight?
Yeah.
I always thought exercise was about losing weight, whatever. But when shortly after I got out of treatment, the second round, I remember doing one of Laurie Dargan's workouts. And Jesus Christ, I remember I really put in an effort. And it was like this release. And I remember like ringing people, I never knew exercise did this for you. And that was like, because all the AA meetings stopped during the pandemic as well. And they were put online, but it wasn't the same. Mm. So then that's why, it's not that I necessarily stopped. It was just like, it wasn't the same. So then I started exercising to help me as a release. And that helped even more. And that's why when I'm doing the running and all that kind of stuff, like taking off the marathon, sure, I couldn't run or anything. That couldn't, and I think, when I realised my first marathon, that's like that day for me, and I wasn't open with my story or anything like that, and you didn't even know, was the day I finished the finish line. That day was like, you really have turned it all around. Do you know what I mean? I was like holding the medal and I was like, Jesus Christ, you really are a completely different woman, and you have completely turned your life around. And I was just so proud. And I actually even think this marathon, doing this one properly, and then it being the 5 years and everything, I think that this one will be even more kind of emotional, if that makes sense, and means more to me. But the whole thing, it has been, it's been hard. There's very hard days. There's awfully hard days. There's days of my anxiety where I don't want to get out of bed in the morning. Every single morning I wake up, there's a cloud of anxiety. Every single day. And I just have to, like, do I want to stay in bed? Do I want to bring it with me to work? And I just have to get up. Some days I don't have to, be careful as well. I don't have to exercise every single day because that'll be an addiction again. So I have to be careful with every single thing. Am I getting addicted? Because I remember the odd time I'd skip an exercise, and I used to, even in Red FM, and I'd go in and I'd be kind of like, do you find me any bit different today? Because I wouldn't have done a workout. And they'd be like, no, why? Because I didn't work out today, and I'm afraid I'm not full of dopamine and all this kind of stuff, and I'm not high and jumping around the place. And they're like, no, I didn't notice anything. So I have to be careful with that as well. And I think as well, I'm very kind of, when I am happy and good mood, like, that's real. I don't want to fake it or anything, because do you know what, toxic positivity as well, I'm not into that. So I just rely on exercise and all that kind of stuff. Will I stay sober forever? Don't know. No one knows. I don't know. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. But you know what, the biggest relief for me now with this will be, Jesus Christ, anytime I used to do a Q&A, why don't you drink, like, I could never say it. I always come up with an excuse. But no, whenever I ask, why don't you drink, I just say I'm recovering, and it stops. And it's more like, Jesus, fair play. Because the one thing, since I put this up on my Instagram, the amount of messages of people telling me their siblings, their mother, their father, their husbands, wives are in trouble, and they're all like, what can I do to help them? But the thing is, you have to be able to help yourself.
There you go, yeah.
Like, that's the sad part.
And you went looking
part.
For help. Those two times you went to your mom saying, I'm a mess, I need to go for help.
Yeah, and several times, the first time around, especially my mother would have hinted at the help thing. And I was like, Sharon, only 24, why doesn't it wrong me? Yeah. Not an addict at all. And actually, they're out of the first round of treatment I was with, I think there's around 15 of them dead, which is terribly sad.
Because you'd all remain friends,
you'd be friends on Facebook, and we all think that we're going to make it. Like, I would be the eternal optimist. I would have taught everyone that I was doing the meditation with everyone I was in group, because you build a special bond. There's one girl that was in treatment with, shared a room with her 14 years ago, and I swear to God, I speak to her every single day, 14 years, and we share a special bond that, like, and we still laugh at some of the stuff we get up to, and she'd have these irrational, crazy thoughts that, like, don't make sense to anyone else, and she'll text me about it, and even I'll say something and it won't make sense to anyone else, and we have each other every single day, and we have a bond that will always, it can never break it, you know what I mean? But there's a lot of those girls who are no longer with us, and it's so, when it goes out in the group chat or whatever, that we'll say someone's gone, it takes you back. And it's even like when you hear someone famous dies of addiction, like, I'll never forget when Amy Winehouse died. And you're like, you hear it's addiction and all that. It hits different, because you're like, that could be me. And also, like, the time of the accidental overdose, like, I didn't mean that. If I wasn't found that day, I don't think I'd be here. And that's sad that I was in that much of a state. And the thing is, I was too ashamed to look for help. And you know, the fact is, if anyone comes to you looking for help, you take it as an honour that someone will confide in you. Not that you have to be ashamed of it. You know what I mean? If you needed help with something now, I wouldn't be like, oh God, Julie. I'd be absolutely honoured that you could talk to me and you would open up to me. And I think anyone listening, if anyone does, if they're like, oh my God, I have a drink problem, I can't tell anyone, you can tell someone and they'll be there to help you. Do you know what I mean? There's going to be no one who's going to turn down anyone to help. You know what I mean? And it's just a very lonely illness, and it really is. And it's a lot of shame with it. A lot of shame. But come here, there's an alcoholic or an addict in every family in Ireland.
Absolutely. You know what I mean?
I think it's come full circle, thank God. But again, every single day I have to work on it. Every single day I have to watch it. Every single day. And like, you know what? Especially now when I'm out and stuff like that, when I'm going out with some of the girls over in London, whatever, and I can't, and I see them all drinking. The odd time you're like, this is fucking shit. Why me? But you know what? Why not me? Would I change any of it? Would I change getting apps, ruining that day up in Croke Park? Would I change losing my job in Red FM? I wouldn't change a thing. Not a thing. I wouldn't, because I wouldn't be the person I am today.
I think that's a lovely line to finish off on.
And I wouldn't be doing this podcast with you as well.
Stop. I'm friend. I am so proud of you. I really am. I'm the proudest friend in the
country.
You've
been a great friend.
I really am. And, oh, I don't think
laughing.
That's a
no,
dry
again.
Eye
I know. My makeup's second round.
I know. Oh my God. Right. I think we're going to have to leave it there, because I'm in awe of you. I'm absolutely speechless.
I was going to say, I need a drink after that.
I'd be the one to drive the jet. Right, on that note, Brenda, thank you so much for sharing your story all of us. And we love you so much. And you're an inspiration. And it's an honour to sit here with you today. Thanks, Jule. And for you to share your story.
I'm so glad to be able to tell my story. And hopefully, I'm sharing because I hope it'll help someone. You know what I mean? If it helps one person, the job is done.
Yeah, and we'll leave the number as well in the show
absolutely
notes.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And a bit of more information. So guys, thank you so much for listening. And Brenda, thank you.
And if anyone wants any correspondence or anything, your Instagram,
Twins and Me,
and me, Brenda's Bits, and then the email leftonredpod22@gmail.com.
thanks guys.
Bye.